anything?
No, we're all through, just sitting here relaxing.
Okay, good. Well, I hope it's not going to take too long. I'll ask you, a dozen questions or so, and if you would, please just answer as long or as short as you want to.
Yeah, no problem at all.
Anything you don't want to answer, just don't answer.
Okay,
you signed at the age of 19 with the Tigers, and they started you out at the top of the minor leagues. Were you a bonus baby at that time?
No, it was at the time when bonus players were allowed to sign.
Right.
But the bonus back then, if you made over, I forget what the figure was, it was either if you made over $6,000, $7,000, or $8,000, or $10,000, you were considered a bonus player, and you could only send you out of the minors for 1 year.
Uh-huh.
That was the rule back then. And I didn't sign. I had a chance to sign with one club as a bonus player, but I turned it down because I didn't think I could go from high school in 1 year in minors and back to the big leagues.
Right.
So I didn't sign the bonus back then.
Obviously you must have impressed them for them to start you at the top of the minor league system.
Well, I was fortunate that year because when the Tiger was one of the years that Detroit had just bought the Toledo Ball Club.
Right.
And it gave them two AAA ball clubs. So they signed my contract to AAA, to the Toledo Mudhead team at that time because that was their top, one of their new clubs.
Uh-huh.
And I did sign a Detroit contract because that would have put me at the major league level. So I basically signed a minor league contract at Toledo.
How was the adjustment from high school to professional?
Really, there wasn't not that much adjustment. It was just a matter of, you didn't know the difference, because you start spring training. I was fortunate that year that they invited me to the big league camps. They didn't have Tiger Town set up yet. They invited myself and maybe a dozen other pitchers like they always do to throw batting practice for the hitters until the regular pitchers get in shape. So I was fortunate to be in spring training and early with the regular pitchers and got to throw a lot early. And then, of course, they always used to play a few inter-squad games, before the exhibition season wasn't that big of a deal back then.
Right. Right.
So I had two pitches in a couple of the inter-squad games and did well. So then when we started playing the exhibition games, I got the pitch against a couple ball clubs in exhibition, and I did well against those ball clubs in spring training, and I stayed with the Detroit ball club almost through the whole spring training, like I was the only one with them.
Uh-huh.
And then about 10 days before they broke camp, they sent me over to a little city called Bartow, Florida, where the Toledo Ball Club was training.
Uh-huh.
So I had a good spring with the regular ball club, so they just figured, I pitched good against the big league club, I could, stay at the AAA level, so which I did.
Well, you had, your 1950 season was considerably improved over your 49 year, in fact, so much that...
because I had that whole year of experience.
Right. Well, the Tigers were impressed. They brought you up at the end of the season.
Again, the following year, I got another chance to go to spring training with the Tigers because I had a good year before, and they brought me back the following year, and I had an even better spring training. In fact, I went with the club north, and I got right into Cleveland for opening day, but I wasn't on the roster. And they sent me on opening day. I tried to win the Toledo Ball Club, was reported a couple days later playing Toledo, so I just took a bus ride from Cleveland down to Toledo.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to spring training with the Toledo Ball Club. And I joined the Toledo Club right in Toledo and started pitching right there and had some good ball games, and they brought me up the end of the year.
Well, the start of the next year, you made the team and you started out like gangbusters.
Yeah.
And now Uncle Sam got a hold of it.
Yeah, Uncle Sam won. Don't want you.
Did you play ball in the service?
Yeah, I played for 2 years. I played in Battle Creek at Fort Custer. That's where I was drafted and inducted, and I stayed right there for 2 years.
Was it a good level of ball?
No, it was probably only about a class eight, type of thing. That was the only thing bad about it. The competition wasn't there. You didn't get to the point where you worked on anything to try to get better, because, at that level, you didn't really have to go and pitch against
Army
teams. some amateur teams here once in a while. But, so it really was just like a waste of 2 years, you might say, as far as, you know, developing anything.
Without the competition, it's very difficult to improve yourself.
Yeah, because you don't, nothing there to push you, and there was nobody around to teach you things. You know, there was no coaches at that level to really help you develop pitches and different things of that nature you should have been getting better at.
Yeah, when you're the best one there, it's awful hard for them to try to work with you.
Yeah.
Well, you came back out 2 years in Detroit, and the bullpen, they sold you to Kansas City. What was your thoughts regarding that?
Well, it was really a good thing for me to get traded because the Detroit at that time was really in a big turmoil. I think Mr. Briggs had died, and Spike Briggs had taken over the ball club, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know much about baseball, and I think the 53 ball club, just as good as when I got out of the Army, I think finished dead last, I think for the only time in the history of the Detroit Tigers, dead last. And they were going through a real big changeover all the way through their farm system. And, they really didn't have nobody down in the farm system really who was directing anybody. You know, it was sort of a situation where nobody knew what was going on, and the organization at one time under Mr. Briggs was had fallen apart under his son.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of cut everybody, sold everybody, traded everybody, and things went from, you know, went probably, like I say, the worst that they've ever been in Detroit.
Very dark days in Detroit.
When I got over to Kansas City, of course, the only problem I had over there is I had been sitting around Detroit for, I had picked a baseball up in spring training. Because they wouldn't pitch me up here, because that was when they could carry 28 players.
Mm-hmm.
So they brought out, they always bring up three extra pitchers. They carried, we must have 15 pitchers on the team with it.
Wow.
So the three of us were, the, you know, three of the guys that had, we had three kids that they had to get rid of. I think they couldn't keep after the cut down date, so they just kept us around trying to make deals. And then it came up that they end up just selling me outright to Kansas City.
Well, you joined them, spent the season there, and then back to the minors for a couple of years. You, just looking at your record, and it's with the situation in Detroit, this might not be true, but it looks like you were probably one of those guys classified as a little slower to mature. Is that accurate?
Well, the biggest thing was, like I said, Detroit didn't have anybody that could help you.
Mm-hmm.
Pitching staff in the minor leagues. I worked in Toledo under a coach called Boom Boom Beck.
I remember him, yeah.
And his idea of helping a pitcher was, don't let you drink cold water during the game. I mean, that was his whole strategy of pitching. So it basically, I didn't get very much development the last 2 years in the Army, and then when I came back from Detroit, they came back and they wanted me to be the, you know, the one or two inning pitcher at the end. So they didn't really let me develop any other pitches other than the good one or two pitches I had. So I was really never a complete pitcher, you know, when I was in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't help me those 2 years because they were in such bad shape that they weren't helping anybody. And then when I went to Kansas City, they were an expansion team. So they didn't really have the first year or so over there. They didn't have much to give you much help either.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went over there, it was sort of one of them deals, like I said, without spring training. Right away they threw me into a starter, and I've been a reliever for about 4 years. Now I got to start pitching 8-9 innings every day.
That makes it tough.
And I hadn't thrown in a month real good, you know, in the hitting competition. So I didn't start out too good. And about halfway through the year, I came up with a shoulder problem, which was the heat, because it was so hot there. It was always up in the 90s every day, and it sweat so much that I was losing all the liquid out of my body, so my muscles weren't retaining water.
Drinking too much cold water again.
I wasn't drinking any water. Not enough over there, because you sweat more than you could put in almost.
Sure.
So then I went down to the minor leagues, and I got over that problem, and then I ran into a couple, you know, one of the pitchers down there who was good pitcher and have been bobbing around, and he helped me with my third pitch down there. So now I ended up, I had three pitches, and then of course Kansas City called me right back right away after about a year and a half. They said I was, they bought my contract and brought me back up the pond here, and then I had a couple fairly decent years with Kansas City before they traded me to White Sox.
Yeah, about that time you came back to Kansas City, you really, you were still on a, not a very good team.
Well, Kansas City never did have a good team as long as they were the Kansas City. They didn't get to be good until they come to, until they moved to Oakland, and Finley took them out there and started buying all the players.
Yeah, but you at that time, you developed into, you know, one of the top half a dozen or so right-handers in the league.
See, well, that was the main thing. I got over to Kansas City. When I came back up, they had to hire Johnny Sain as their pitching coach.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny Sain was a real good tutor for right-hand pitchers, and his ideas seemed to be just what I needed. You know, he had to, some of his ideas worked real good with me. He didn't work with everybody, but his ideas on some of my pitches helped me out. And then, of course, when I got to Chicago, Al Lopez and Ray Berries were outstanding pitching coaches.
Yeah, that was as good a twosome, I guess, as they ever had.
They could find out little things you were doing wrong and improve the morals there. So it sort of was a late coming around, mainly because I didn't really get the real good coaching at an earlier age.
Right.
You know, maybe whatever reason it was.
That makes it real tough.
Yeah.
In 62, in Chicago, I guess that has to rank as your best season, led the league in 20 wins, led the league in winning percentage. As a kid, I was probably not a kid at that point anymore, but I still was following the players I had followed the few years before that. And I seem to remember that you were almost unbeatable the last 6 weeks or so of the season. How you went down the stretch winning almost every time you went out.
Yeah, I won my last six in a row to end up winning 20.
Yeah.
I had to beat the Yankees, and the Red Sox in the last 10 days, the three of them in a row.
Wow.
I beat them. I beat the Yankees in Chicago on Saturday. I beat the Red Sox in Boston on Wednesday, and the Yankees again on Sunday.
It's a heck of a way to close it out.
That gave me my 20 wins.
You were also on the All-Star team that year.
Yeah,
won the game.
I got picked because there was a two All-Star league that year.
Right.
I played two games, and we were playing. First game, I think, was in New York or someplace. I think I forget where the first game was. And the second game was at Cubs Park. And a fellow named Ken McBride, who was on the California team, was picked for the first game. And when he showed up for the first game, he said his arm was bothering him. So then when they usually had one day off, and then they played the second game. Well, they came to, you know, Lopez came to me and said that they wanted me to replace him on the squad, mainly because we were in Chicago and I had a good start. I think it was 9-5 or something at the break. So I got picked for the All-Star game, and then when I went into Chicago, I figured, well, they had seven pitchers or something on the ball club. You know, 7 or 8 on the All-Star team. And when I went in, the manager said, hey, when did you pitch last? I said, well, I pitched, I think, on Friday or Saturday. And they said, well, there's only about three of you that did pitch over the weekend that could pitch. He says, you guys are going to pitch today. So I got the second three innings, and you know, I gave them a couple signals, and we scored a bunch of runs in the second and third inning. We went ahead, so I got the win there.
Well, you shut them down completely. You had a couple of hits, but
yeah,
no runs. The next year, it appears that you pitched in pretty tough luck. You almost had to shut them out to win.
Yeah, I had four in a row, and I think I had seven for the year, and I think I only won 13 games, and I think seven of them were shutouts.
Yeah, that's an amazing statistic. Then did you get injured after that because your amount of games?
About halfway through the year, we were playing a game in Cleveland, and of course it was in the middle of the year. But at that park in Cleveland, at Tennessee, all the way off the lake, some days you'd go in there and play a night game, and it seemed like 30 degrees outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pitching the ball game, and about the third or fourth inning, I came up to hit. You know, because pitchers had to hit that.
Right.
You know, pitchers were hitting all that. And I don't know, he threw a pitch inside, and I pulled back real quick to get away from the pitch, you know. And when I did that, I pulled the pulled all the muscles off my right elbow. You know, off the bone.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't know how to say. My whole arm. The next day, I woke up. I went out to try to pitch the next inning, but couldn't. And then the next day, I woke up and my arm was black and blue from my shoulder down to my wrist.
Wow.
The blood vessels had tore. So I went on the 30-day disabled list. You know, for that time, and it never did heal. I went to back pitch down later in the year, but I didn't. I just didn't go through too good.
Well, with an injury like that, and you were not a kid anymore. You were in your 30s.
Oh, my 30s. Yeah.
You came back to be a good, useful pitcher after that, and that's amazing.
Yeah, I was just I tore all those muscles off that elbow, the bone or something. The doctor, he explained it basically what it was. When I pulled away like that, I just jerked all the tendons and muscles right off the bone, I guess, or something like that. It took a while for it to heal, but I did ever did throw much the rest of the year.
Well, as you got older, your control got better.
Yeah, that's what I'm working over here with Ferris State baseball team here in Michigan.
Uh-huh.
A college team, a little college team up here in Michigan. And that's what I try to teach these kids up here is how important control is over other stuff. And see, I was never taught that when I was a kid. They were always talking about setting hitters up and doing this and doing that. Nobody ever impressed about anybody about control because most everybody had good control. And as I got older, I certainly picked that up and I concentrated. That's why I had such good years later in my career because my control was that much better.
Yeah, you really had outstanding control.
I used to figure if I walked one guy a game, then I had a bad game.
Yeah, and that was, well, let's say you were 1 year like 1.25, another year like another one 1.25 strikeouts and for 9 innings. That's something you don't see too often.
I didn't strike out. I didn't want to strike too many hitters out because I wasn't that type of pitcher.
Yeah.
Again, I didn't want to walk the hitters because if I didn't walk them, then I'd have to strike anybody out.
I didn't
walk anybody. If I struck out two or three, I was ahead.
I've got a son who's a pitcher in college right now, and he's successful, but he can't throw the ball through wet tissue paper. But he doesn't walk anybody.
Got a better chance of winning the guy that can.
Yeah, he struck out six the other day in a game and thought he was Nolan Ryan. He'd never struck out that many in his entire life.
Well, making good pitches.
Pardon?
Making good pitches, staying ahead of him.
Yeah, well, it's and the more I watch him, the more I believe in control.
Oh, yeah, it's the biggest one. That's what I tell the guys here. It's number one. If you don't have control, you might as well quit.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah.
Is there one game in your career that stands out other than maybe the All-Star game?
Well, of course, the day I won the 20th game, I didn't even pitch a good ball game, but it was just one of those days where I did pitch a good ball game when I won it, so just I would say the game that really stands out was the day of the game I got that I lost my shutout streak.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, see I was pitching I had four in a row.
Uh-huh.
And I was pitching in Baltimore. In there and I don't know Osteen, John Osteen, a catcher.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't even a regular catcher. I don't know, about the third or fourth inning hit a ball on the high to left field and it was credited as a home run, but the outfielder said it didn't go in the stands. It hit, there was a rail that went across, and it hit this rail, which was in play. But the umpire down the line said, no, it hit a seat, bounced back up. But then when they, later in the game, after the game was over, when somebody checked it, they found out that it actually did hit the railing, and it didn't go in the stands. But I gave up a couple runs later in the game, so it didn't make that much difference.
It's still something to remember to lose.
Well, they really, if you got to look for a game that ended my shutout streak. So I guess you remember those things more than you do the other ones.
I bet you would. I guess have a niche in baseball history. You gave up Yastrzemski's first base hit.
Yeah.
Who was the best player or best hitter you saw? I can't imagine it would be him, but maybe it was.
I think Ted Williams.
Oh, yeah.
I pitched against him for quite a good years, and overall, you know, I was over in the National League for a while, but Musial already gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get to pitch that much. I pitched against Musial, I think, once in spring training. But I think for overall good hitting and just solid ball, you know, just all the way around type hitter, is you have to go with a hitter like Williams. Like I said, I pitched against DiMaggio, but he was on his way out in 1950 when I came up.
Right.
He had a good years already. And Mantle was a strong hitter. You know, Mantle was the kind of guy that either hit one 400 feet away or he could strike him out.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't what you considered a dangerous hitter as Williams would be. There's a lot of hitters in the league that, you know, like guys like Nellie Fox wear everybody out.
Yeah.
Guys like Kaline who were just all good, all-around hitters. But Williams seemed to be the most dedicated hitter of all of the players that I'd seen.
I think everyone to a man that I've spoken with who played with him or against him say he was.
He was the only one that really, you know, back to school when everybody, you know, everybody worked at hitting, he was the initial teacher, you know, everybody.
Yeah.
You know, you'd go out to the ballpark. Well, when we go on the road, we'd play in Boston. Of course, the hotel was just down the street. We didn't go by bus. Everybody just walked over. And in the case, you know, like pitchers, when you're young, you just didn't have anything. You go to a movie or something, they'd wander over there maybe 5 o'clock, 4:30, 5 o'clock, just walk over after dinner and just sit around and watch the hitters hit. And he was always out there and he just worked what he did.
And seemed to be able to do it forever.
And he would just, he had that one guy from the one of the trainers or something, one of the guys in the clubhouse that threw to him every day and he just wear the balls out, you might say.
Yeah. He did.
Between Boggs a little bit in that area right now, he worked hard like that too. But
yeah. Doesn't have the strength.
Doesn't have the power and, you know, and the drive, I don't think, that Williams had over the 20 years or so.
You're not going to find many ever that will have that. Who was the toughest?
In World War II, in North Korea. So he had quite a few years to get, lose his drive, but he never did.
It's amazing to contemplate what he may have done if he hadn't lost those 5 years.
Last February, I was down in Florida for that. They have had an old-timers game down there in Florida
mm-hmm.
last year, and I went down there and I was talking to him. He was managing one of the American League team over in St. Pete. And he was still the same kind of manager that he was then.
How was his health now, do you know?
I seen in a paper the other day that he had some problems, but that the doctor said that he was doing better and that he was out of danger or something like that. He was having some kind of stomach problems or something like that.
It was mentioned here, but I'm in Lexington, Kentucky, and this is a football and basketball area, and unless something really major happens in baseball, we don't hear too much about it.
I just read that in the paper the other day that he was sick and he was supposed to go to some baseball thing last summer or something like that. He didn't make it or something because of his health. And the paper said about a month ago that he had gone in for some tests and some minor things and it solved his problem.
Okay, well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Who was the toughest hitter on you?
The toughest hitter, I used to have a lot of time with Tony Kubek.
Mm-hmm. And he was a good hitter.
I had trouble with him with Jim Turner there. Not Turner, the third base coach for the Yankees back then. And Turner was the pitching coach.
Crosetti?
Crosetti. And Crosetti used to tell him, hit me the other way all the time. You know, hit the ball in left field because he's a left-hand hitter, and I used to keep the ball away from him most of his time. And then he'd try to pull me, because, you know, the short porch in Yankee Stadium, all left-handers wanted to pull. So I used to get him out pretty good, and he finally told him to start hitting the ball the other way, and next thing you know, I can't get him out. He was getting 2-3 hits every ball game I pitched against him.
Oh, that hurts.
He'd look for me every day. So he got to be really a tough out after he started changing his way of hitting.
He was a smart hitter, too.
Yeah, he wasn't a big kid. He was a tall kid, but he wasn't he thought he should be hitting more home runs, but he wasn't. He didn't have that kind of swing.
No, I never did. I've never seen him play a lot.
Line drive was his best thing, but he was a tall kid. You know, he was big. Where they thought, well, you should be hitting home runs. You know.
No, it's in the swing. It's not in the size.
Quick yard. It's not big yard.
Who was the best pitcher you saw?
You mean overall, year in and year out, or just for?
Well, either way, either you know, for 1 year or for consistency over the years.
Well, I was back when everybody had three or four top pitchers. You know, like Cleveland had Wynn, Feller, Garcia, Lemon.
Right.
Now, there's four right there, and the Yankees had Ford, Reynolds, Lopat. You know, and every team at that time we had. Detroit had Newhouser, Dizzy Trout, Freddie Hutchinson. You know, Chicago had early Wynn was over there, and Shaw, and they had almost everybody had three or four real, you know, tough pitchers. But I would have to go with guys like Feller, the consistency in the early, you know, in the late 40s and early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, as they slowly progressed, I have to say a guy like Jim Bunning was an outstanding pitcher because he pitched both leagues. One, and then of course McLean came around. He had a couple of good years. You know, and you got to go with Gibson. When I was seeing Gibson, I was with the Tigers in '68 in the World Series. Gibson pitching over there. I was in a National hitting off Drysdale and Colfax. So you know, to say one guy is, they're all Hall of Famers. So there's put one of them guys and put him say, well, he's greater than all of them.
Yeah, that's
pretty tough to do in my year anyway. I mean, now you could probably do it real easy. You don't have that many of them running around on it.
Sure, you can pick five of them now anyhow. And back in your time, you couldn't. Five was just getting you started.
Yeah, five would be on one team.
Yeah.
Now you got them spread over 26 teams or something like that.
Going on 28.
28 teams.
Yeah, in a couple of years.
The only one I would say that's real consistent right now would be a guy like Ryan.
Yeah.
Over the years.
excuse me. But this is a pretty typical response. The fellows I talk to from your era, they can pretty well name the top hitter, and maybe some of them will name two or three. They may say Williams, but then maybe Mantle could have been or something like that. But come to the pitchers, a couple of fellows said they can't even begin to name the pitchers. There were so many good ones.
It was just back in the era when pitching was so good, everybody had them. That's why when most clubs came up, there was no such thing as relief pitchers and short men and long men in the bullpen. You came up with you started north, you came up with 11 and 12 starters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had four or five that was going to start, but if they pitched two or three bad games in a row, they dropped into the bullpen and you brought one of the new kids in.
Yes, pitching has changed so drastically.
Now you got a guy, and the guy says, I got a quality start. I pitched five innings.
Yes.
Quality, you know. Quality would have got you sent back to the minors.
that term, whoever came up with that.
Quality start, you said, I'm only going to pitch five innings. They'd say, well, you better back someplace and learn how to pitch nine.
I talked to one of your teammates a while back, J.W. Porter.
Oh, yeah, J.W.
Just as nice a fellow as I think I'd ever spoken with, he managed in the Expos system for a while.
Yeah.
And he said that they had him starting these boys out. He says they'd throw 50 pitches and then go along with that for a while. And he says, you know, some of these kids weren't getting out of the third inning, and he had to take them out of the game. And he said that when he was a boy, they learned to throw by throwing. They didn't learn to throw by not throwing.
Yeah, see, that's the problem in nowadays, what they try to do with young pitchers, is throw them often. They say, well, if we throw you every day, it'll build your arm up. But it's just the opposite. It doesn't. It's what they mean to build it up for, like I work with these kids over here, we start out with 5 or 6 minutes, you rest the day, and then you go to 7 or 8, and you build up to 15, 18, 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But you get your rest in between. You know, you don't throw 18 minutes a day. And what they try to do is they try to find relief pitchers.
That's what they're doing, yeah, right.
That's what they try to do. See, what they do is they take they got 20 pitchers or 50 pitchers in their organization. Well, they say, well, we got to come up with half of them got to be relief pitchers. So the first thing to do in order to be a relief pitcher, you got to throw every day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they take these kids with arms, and they say, well, okay, you're going to throw today, tomorrow, the next day, maybe give you a day off, and then you're going to throw the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And then they wonder why these kids' arms are, you know, they're hanging by their arm, and they can't go, they can't pitch at all.
Yeah, and they're teaching them to throw a short period of time. That's all they're going to learn.
They're trying to get them to throw a short period of time every day.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of throwing them one day and giving them two or three days off, and then build up their strength like they used to in spring training. We used to go to spring training, and by the time you left spring training, you were either throwing 20 minutes hard bat practice every third day, or you were pitching 3 and 4 and 5 innings.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the season got along, you pitched more. There's no such thing as going out there and going 5 hard innings and getting out.
Well, I'm not even sure they're going 5 hard innings anymore.
Well, I mean 5 innings, period. That was what they considered a quality start move or starter.
It used to be, in the time you played, even the guys in the bullpen who were stuck down there all year that were legitimately failed starters, they'd still, at the end of the season, they'd be averaging 3 innings an outing, even, you know, solid relief.
Because you didn't have the guy that only pitched 1 inning at a time and come out.
Yeah, you've got guys now who pitch 55 games and end up with 45 innings.
That's the problem. I think they just try to organizations just know they got it. They know they only got 4 starters. They got 10 pitchers on the staff. Half are starters, half are relievers. So they try to develop 50% of their minor league pitchers into starters, and the other 50 into relievers.
Yeah.
You end up with 50 guys. You try to make relievers out of. You probably kill 50 arms.